sense. But okay, I'm starting the recording for this one. Predictions, MVP, first All-Star game, defensive player of the year, rookie of the year, coach of the year, sixth man, most improved, best move, worst move, biggest potential disappointment, favorite storyline, any random thing that you really want to think of, we can just kind of go with it and just spend 30 minutes on it.
Yeah.
Alrighty, here we go. In 3, 2, Place to Be Nation, welcome back in the regular season to the NBA Team Podcast here on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only Place to Be Nation in your pop culture world. You see what I just did there? I am your co-host, Andrew Reich. I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. How much do you love PlaceToBeNation.com, Adam?
It is a place for tons of wrestling information. Quick play for basketball, right?
Well, they just had Joe that long ago. There's some person in the age. I do something, but the problem was Rainey was in California, so one on the left coast and one on the right coast. So they threw SummerSlam to Brooklyn, New York. Now they're having other show in the Boston. They blew it off with Brock and Undertaker. So.
Just let me know when the next Starcade is.
Are you an NWA guy? When you say old, you mean Taser, Berg, Ric Flair.
That's Rhodes Haywinda era.
Rhodes Haywinda. No, just with the reason, and as we are having with it, everybody's enjoying it. And pretty interesting. We've seen a lot of really cool development. We're just doing our pushes here. Just going forward in the regular season. Adam and I kind of go spitball at each other. Not really spitball. I always think I flex balls. But what schools are good at?
None, because I was quite well behaved.
Did you do the little paper where you flick good at little pills?
Paper, yeah, those were. I was good. Mm-hmm. It was just more. It wasn't really many shenanigans. It was just all like. You know, we do just like, you know. If we're supposed to meet fellows,
you just spent all your days reading.
What's Quinn?
Old timey Latin book, right?
Old time Latin, wow. So the references get more and more obscure every week here.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's an old timey book. I'm just going off topic here. We're just talking about the prediction for the NBA regular season. We got a bunch of ones right out. Kind of in that the award categories, which is always a real fun one that you hear all the MVP talk. And who's going to win the defensive player of the year? Who's going to get into this year? You know, just a lot of really random. We're going to try to sort it out as quickly as we possibly can. What's the one prediction that you want to, like a bold one, just right off the top that you throw at me and say it's going to be a big part of the AFC season?
I think I don't really have a bold prediction.
Like a big idea. Like when you think of the 2015 NBA season, what's the first thing you have?
The first thing I think people are actually going to notice the defense of the year, given Draymond, Messi, and you know, Damari Carroll is huge signing. Also, now we need 3D. I think now it's going to be on more glue play as it was before, as opposed to just Tyson Chandler destroy the league for 10 years and nobody
to
miss.
You know, the weird thing about glue players, you know, guy, you know, like Leonard would have been considered back in the day, you know, somebody like Ron Artest, you know, when he was in this glue player, those players where they would all this category or glue player or something like that. Has it gotten to a point where a glue player is not only a specialist in NBA now, but it's a very specifically detailed type specialist that you can also poke holes in yours?
Yeah, they're no longer specialists. They're their own. They don't get notoriety. They're superstars. They're high level ones. They're medium ones. And you see, okay, you're the re guy. Even that. Yeah, being re-got, like, you know, as a Kyle Korver. Well, now he's sort of marginalized because he can't play D. Now what can you do? Mm-hmm. You can free, well, yeah, you don't want even Boogie Cousins and your waves there shooting threes.
Yeah, I also saw Cousins a little bit. He is draining threes. Scary part with Cousins is that not he's just seeing more threes under George Kofan. He's making them, which is scary enough. King never took any last season. Yeah, we need for type of roles now where it's set into the role where you can do more than anything based on what the team needs. Like a stretch four, you know, that's usually a big man. At the end of the day, you're still big. You need to rebound, you can still rebound. So they take one thing away, you still do another. The other one is obviously taught so many times scoring point guards. You know, just because, so for example, if you have a bad G9 at a point guard position, you can still decide, okay, I'm going to stop and distribute the ball and facilitate that way and help my team. You know, defenders is the other one. Wing defenders is a big one. Why do you think Al-Farouq Aminu got absolutely no room in Portland?
Yep, not like I said, everybody has to be a star at position where your required job is. You know, in the league, it's what you need to be.
Yeah, but the that accept that role. And now we've got a point where people can accept those roles and be all-stars in those roles. That never happened. We never had players who were junkyard dogs that would make the all-star game. Now we're seeing guys like they're considered all-in guys like a Raymond Green, like a Rudy Gobert, guys who really are good at a couple of things, but or jam all trades or in some cases, but get more crown because people see that it's more quantified with all the analysts and they become more valuable.
Yeah, it's bad into it, you're trainer.
Yes.
Now you're a max player.
Is Kawhi sort of the poster boy for this?
Yes.
Knows MVs.
Yes, he's the poster boy. I would have said, strangely, on the other end, we Paul George. Mm-hmm. Because he was sort of, you know, too big to be one, but he's skinny to be the other, and he's like the reverse Jenner.
You know who is one of the originators of this? Is Rodman.
Rodman and Barkley.
Rodman and Barkley commodified rebounding. Rebounding became something they had to pull.
Ben Wallace couldn't even shoot anything. Mm-hmm. So he's an all-star because he's pulling on 20 boards a game.
Yeah, they were winning defensive player of the year because they're really, there's no best guy award. There's no best wingman award as defensive player of the year. Do you have a prediction for defensive player
of the year? No, I think why.
Kawhi Leonard again?
Yeah.
You basically did Alvin Robinson only much better.
Basically, if you want the bold prediction, sort of the outsider, I'll give it to Michael Gobert, but...
Is he much announced that every prediction?
But that's made the Kool-Aid because he had a 1 month good run. And yeah, you're doing it against European competition, but in the end, that's European competition.
Good, you're a bad. You look strong.
Yeah, it's not hard to look strong when you're playing, you know, a Macedonian team who has people, you know, their
starbells. I love making you cookies. mine is predictable based on starting base. I think Anthony Davis. I think Davis's blocks are going to be about as high as they were last year. And I think because they're going to be, Pelicans going to be more of an offensive-minded group, his defensive effort is going to be even more focused. It's going to be more focused on how well he controls the paint and controls the defense. And if the Pelicans have a turnaround, if they have a decent season and they get to the playoffs and maybe bump up a playoff spot, then they're going to give credit to Davis on the defensive end.
Okay.
Almost on the defensive play of the year.
I can't give it to Davis because I would put him as a front runner for league MVP.
Well, I'd be in there too.
You're like, you're defense. I'm like, no,
hey,
I think
Michael defensive player of the year and be in the eighth.
It's gonna happen. I think we have one person too many awards. And...
Will it ever we win defensive player again? Run our test like was the last one, right?
If you want to call him a guard.
Mm-hmm. What about Kawhi? Is Kawhi a guard?
No, he's a forward.
But he's weird. They run LeBron sets with Kawhi sometimes in San Antonio, where he sort of roams. He fakes a ball screen, or he fakes a dribble handoff, and he just kind of goes to work. You know, Popovich trusts him a lot more than he trusts some of the other players.
Yeah, there's a case. You know, look at Tony Allen's been, you know, first team, second teams, all defensive team. Mm-hmm. So there's not to say there's not going to be some kid who's just going to be, I'm going to be that guy. Like, let's say Gilchrist, I'd be like, okay, I don't need to be a shooter anymore.
While he's recovering from his shoulder injury, that's probably going to take him out for the year.
He still thinks, you know, I could be that scorer. No, he's like, no, I'm going to be that lockdown defender. Okay, Lance, if he just says he's going to keep me in the league, you know, you can do it.
Yeah, but people do when they're lower-level players that are different in the league. Or getting older, and they know they're at one or two. Like, guess what? Paul Pierce is good at. He caught shots. That's all he's gonna do all season long. The one talking about in the earlier conversation with the glue guys, those are guys that are specifically the level of play. They can do more than one thing well. Because if they can do but one thing well, if you take one away, it can they.
But there's a difference. Now you're just the one the glue guy. Well, you're the glue guy. You can be like. Well, there's a difference between all the guys. This is a way to say I'm gonna be an elite guy now. So it's from people who are. You know, on that, like, okay, you're good, but now you can be great if you
want
to.
Let's talk about the zone here in an awards category because it's just, it's the NBA's design. At the end of the day, that's the hardware, that's this book, that's the Wikipedia writer, so let's talk about them. Sixth man of the year, give me a prediction here.
It should be Isaiah Thomas, hands down. He should have won it last year.
Is that cheating, or can I only pick one?
No, you can any. Well, unless they're all. That's a second weekend.
Well, I don't know.
I have a prediction they're going to get rid of Trust. Yes, I'm. Talking too much? What's he going for? Bring himself out of Cleveland.
I think he's going to end up doing what Jim Boeheim did with him in Syracuse, because Billy Donovan's like, he had on come off the bench and he sparked. I think he's going to do the same thing as Oklahoma City.
We have a spark plug, but think Florida teams. How many records have we come under?
Nine. He's a big dude, man. The only one was Nick Kalathis. Kalathis played a year there. He went to Greece for a few years and he wound up in the NMB for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, but he, you know, pure guard. But, you know, Kalathis is a straight three. You know, he's not known for really having guard play. And, you know, okay, I don't know his assist under him, but, okay, you have fucking Durant. Well, we don't need to miss those guys, two best guards in the league. We focus on our big men. We need to figure out the Steven Adams, Cantor, Baca, try and figure out how it can work.
Russell Westbrook's so great that you can play him at power forward and get away with it.
He plays like now. The problem is, you know, I always said it's sort of slate against the best shooter guard in the league. But, you know, considering he's, you know, not.
This
he's a point guard.
Now, this year was weird with Durant gone. He had one take any shot he wanted. He had the big green light of all the players, all star players in the NBA. And he took terrible shots, but a lot of wins. That's how great he is, like we just said. Let's talk about most improved player. Now, this one's weird. And it's almost like a compliment of, like, hey, you sucked, but look at you now. Exactly.
Hey, where did you come from?
And sometimes most improved, it is legitimately the war. Like, when Paul George, it was like a good step for him. Like,
It's a bit weird if you're young. If you're second or third out, like when I'm assuming you're high, but if you're like three,
it's like, hey, thanks for your prime years. You can go away now.
You're like, what the fuck? You know, I've been here for now.
Let me give you the bullet of one most improved. Let's start in the 90s, because it started in the 80s. Let's start in the 90s. Ronnie Cicely, Scott Skiles, Purvis Ellison, Chris Jackson from LSU when he was with the Nuggets, Don McLean. Is that the same one that sang American Pie? Dana Barros, Kenny Smith tells a great story on that open court show on NBA TV about how Dana Barros, who used to play for the Sixers, he could not guard him. Didn't he play for the Celtics for a little while too? Yeah.
Yep.
George Mirosan won Most Improved Player.
Well, he also won like the field goal percentage.
Wow.
Like,
the guy from My Giant with Billy Crystal.
He also wasn't that commercial. Was it Jordan Brand with the Mirosan cologne? Smells like cabbage.
Isaac Austin from the Miami Heat. I don't even remember him. Alan Henderson, who I was trying to say, with the Atlanta Hawks. I remember he played in Indiana under Bobby Knight. Daryl Armstrong, I remember him. He played with the Magic. He was a little guy. He was the only guy that ever did a layup in the slam dunk contest. If you remember that. He lost the ball going up, and he laid it in. Jalen Rose, that's a good example in 2000. He may have reached his prime at that point, so that's kind of like what you were talking about. And then McGrady won it in 01. That's a good example of what Paul George did, you know?
Yeah, because McGrady, high school kid, came out, was it 95?
Yeah,
so
Jermaine O'Neal, you know, 03, was Gilbert Arenas, Zebo in 2004, Bobby Simmons. Wow, Bobby Simmons. Boris Diaw in 06, Monte Ellis in 07, Hedo Turkoglu in 2008. That was probably his best year. Danny Granger in 2009, Aaron Brooks in 2010, Kevin Love in 2011, Ryan Anderson with the Pelicans, Paul George, Goran Dragic, and then Jimmy Butler last season.
So yeah, you could see, you know, in case of Jalen Rose, it's like, well, you've been here for a while, but now you've started to be the player
we
think you can.
Yeah, same in Orlando.
Yeah, and as opposed to you get young players, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love, and it's like, oh, you know what? You guys have turned up. You are now gone from being very good to being a superstar. I know you're going to probably say Rudy.
Nope.
Gobert. Okay, then I think it you know, I've still, you know, of course you're going to be, you could probably guess mine being Nurkic, but if you just look at his numbers as a, you know, per 36, it's just crazy.
His
upside.
There has to be offensive improvement there for the media to notice it. But now you do make a good point there that offense has exploded so much in the NBA that defensive specialists are more noticeable now. You are right about that. So maybe if the defense is just as effective in this upcoming season as it was late last season, and he does it through an entire season, and he's like top three in blocks, and he's top five in rebounding, maybe that'll be enough to get enough recognition, along with the Utah Jazz needing to improve in their win-loss record, which will be hard in the West.
Yep.
My pick is Giannis Antetokounmpo, because if you look at the stats, it's not... he's not blow away great yet, but I think that we might see that this season. I think that he'll take that next step in Milwaukee.
Also, you could make a case for Wiggins if he just comes in and just starts dropping 25s.
But his numbers as a rookie past the All-Star break were very, very good. That's the weird part about most improved. You need to go from like 0 to 8, or maybe from like 3 to 9. You know, that's kind of like what Paul George did. He went from like a 3 to a 9. You know, can Andrew Wiggins be that kind of a player?
I think he could if he becomes one of those top, you know, top 15 players, top 20 players in the league all of a sudden out of nowhere and just commands that team.
How many players you remember that were like that went from like rookie, because like most people consider like at a rookie, like when you have a fantasy draft, the rookies are all at the bottom because they haven't proven anything, so they're automatic zeros. How many players do you remember that like went from 0 to 10 within a year after winning rookie of the year? Like right off the top of your head, just think of maybe a few.
Derek
Shaq,
Rose,
you know,
Rose, Shaq, Wall, until he.
I don't want to.
Kobe was horrible his first few years.
Well, his second year he made the All-Star game, but he wasn't the best shooting guard in the NBA, you know?
Yeah, that's why I was like, that was sort of like a pay, like that was, you know, I didn't think that was
Shaq
warranted.
Was the best center in the NBA by year two. Well, there was Hakeem, there was Patrick Ewing. Maybe I have to take that back, you know. But yeah, that's a. I don't think we're gonna see that kind of a player though this year, where they go from like, you know, winning rookie of the year to going all the way to like, oh wow, you might be one of the best players in the NBA. I don't know if Wiggins can do that yet in Minnesota.
You don't know, but that team is sort of built for his explosion. Oh, just, you know, people who were dominant after their first year, just to wrap that up. You forgot Iverson Duncan.
Iverson was dropping 50 his rookie year. That was insane.
But you're saying who after winning rookie of the year was...
No, I'm saying to your point, like, by the time he was a rookie, you were like, wow, this guy...
And most recently was with the person we talked about last week, Blake Griffin.
That's another good one. Eight.
Because the first year, it was like he was good, but you know, coming back from the injury, and then all of a sudden the second year, bam.
After 2013, did he need to kind of take another year or two to get there? LeBron, too?
Anthony Davis didn't win Rookie of the Year.
Lillard did, you're right.
Damian Lillard, I'm like...
Well, not necessarily did they won Rookie of the Year, just had good rookie years then.
Oh, yeah. So there's Davis. No, because he was still developing. This past year is when it was open, and this year
and
should be just
Michael
destroyed.
Jordan, he broke his foot his sophomore year in the NBA. You know, no, he came back and dropped 63 on the Celtics in the playoffs because he's just, that's how great he is. Let's move on to another award. Coach of the Year. I like this award because it means you're going to get fired in 3 years. Who do you have here?
I got Spoelstra.
Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra. I didn't know you were eating Italian.
We differ greatly on the Heat. I say they're back. You say
that
they're
means
done.
Eric Spoelstra's going to be gone.
In 3 years?
He peaked with the team he's got this year. And then they're going to start slowly going down.
Oh, of course he is. Once Dwayne Wade goes, and you know, unless they get somebody to replace him, well,
do you think that Dwayne Wade's holding them back?
Not as much. In a year or two, maybe, but right now there's nobody he's holding down. There's nobody that's not getting minutes because of him. I think even with his injuries and the time constraints and whatnot, he still puts them as far as further than without him.
Mine is Frank Vogel with the Indiana Pacers, because I think the Pacers are going to surprise everyone in the East.
See, that's – I can't – like I said last week, I can't – you could tell me they're going to be one of the five worst teams. I'm like, yeah, they really are terrible.
Train of thought here, and it's not necessarily because I think they're going to be great. It's this. The Coach of the Year is awarded to a guy who the media feels like did more with what they were given. They also give it the award to coaches that adapt to the players that are not exactly fitting of the style that they're used to coaching, but they adapt to it anyway and have success with it. With Frank Vogel, he's a defensively minded coach, but he's going to have to play a little faster. If Indiana has success with a faster style, Vogel's going to get a lot of credit for that.
If Vogel wins Coach of the Year, then Most Improved should go to Ian Mahimi.
Ian Mahimi?
Because he's the current center on that team, and that means he's done something.
How about we give Most Improved Player to Paul George because he played 6 games and only averaged about 12 points and 6 rebounds?
Okay, well then by default, the Most Improved Player should go to Randall.
That would be a second one. What does that mean if you win Most Improved Player twice?
That would just be Comeback Player of the Year. But that case should go to Julius Randall. Julius Randle played 7 minutes last year before breaking his leg.
What do you expect out of Julius Randle this year? Like, can you consider him a rookie? And if he were considered that, could he win Rookie of the Year?
He should be considered a rookie, but by NBA standards, he's not.
Like, can't you, wouldn't that be considered like a redshirt? Like a medical redshirt?
I mean, 7 minutes. They're you know, that's sort of cheesing out by the NBA.
I think he's
going to
get a lot of minutes there. You know, with Bass and with Roy Hibbert there, I think he's going to get a lot of minutes in LA.
Oh yeah, he'll get a lot of minutes. And
since we floated over to that topic, Rookie of the Year, was Randall kind of in your radar there if he were considered?
No, Rookie of the Year will be a 2-horse race between Moutier and Okafor.
I don't either guy.
Okafor will get.
Go ahead.
Okafor has carte blanche. That team is, you know, now finally the rumblings are coming out that not everyone's happy with this constant. We stick with the plan of still no improvement with no signs
of
improvement.
Well, that's because, I heard the story that Wells Fargo is pulling their name.
I don't know that, but
so
that wouldn't be related.
They painted the Wells Fargo name the same color as the court with the outline so you can barely see it. Because there's some sort of dispute between the Sixers and Wells Fargo.
That wouldn't be. Don't the Flyers play there as well?
Oh man, I'm gonna have to get Brad Woodling on this because he's a diehard Sixers fan, which means that he's been hiding as an NBA fan for the last 2 or 3 seasons. So I don't really talk to him about the NBA a lot, unless I need to laugh at him. Sorry, Brad. Mine is Stanley.
So that would be an incident with the naming rights, not just the team. Yeah, that would be if the Flyers play there too. So that's something bigger than Wells Fargo pulling their name for a crappy team.
What's your angle on Moutier?
What I saw in the preseason of him is
he's going to get a lot of minutes.
He's going to get a lot of minutes, and there's no reason he can't become a top 5 point guard.
He looks like a point guard. A strong point guard.
Yeah, the John Wall, you know, the John Wall clone.
Yeah, he plays a little bit like Wall. He you know, in the early days when Wall first was with the Wizards, when they still had those ugly blue uniforms, you know, the MJ era uniforms, Wall was seen to me like a player who wanted to be a facilitator, but he didn't know how to do it yet because he was naturally a scorer in high school and AAU. So, and I feel like with Moutier, he needs to reach that first stage of, you know, I can score. I'm a naturally good scorer, so I'm going to do this, but I'm going to try to facilitate more, even though I don't know how to do it yet, you know. He's sort of in that in-between. He's going to have to learn at some point by year 3, am I a passer? Am I a facilitator? Am I a scorer? John Wall decided I'm a passer. Do you think Moutier can do that?
Yes, I think he can. So who's your pick then?
Stanley Johnson of the Detroit Pistons. I think he's going to take that spot away from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think he's looked really, really good in almost every organized game I've seen him in involving the Pistons. He can shoot threes, very athletic, very strong. He looks like a small forward. He's not a guard. He's not a point forward. He's not a stretch forward. He is a small forward. So he will be the guy that is guarding the top small forwards in the game on defense, and he can play a little bit of defense too. So, you know, he also plays number 3, so he looks like a skinny Ben Wallace. Every time I watch him, I'm like, is that Ben Wallace? But now, Stanley Johnson, I think that was a steal. I think he got picked at number 8, and I think that was a steal for them. There's a couple of other ones that we didn't mention, you know, guys like Karl Anthony Towns and Kristaps Porzingis. You see any chance there?
No, Kristaps, I don't see why he wouldn't be a good player, but he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. They're going to
in New York.
I think they're going to limit hits early on. He's not going to have. He'll be on the court, but you know, I think he has to have him. His definition doesn't seem like one of those. Oh, I'll play rookies. I think he's one of those old school coaches of you need to earn your time.
I think
D'Angelo
Russell's going to struggle. The guy who I think is going to wind up going to look good in the minutes he's given, but he's not going to play a lot of minutes, is Mario Hezonja with the Orlando Magic.
See, that brings up an interesting point, which I will address on bold predictions.
Devin Booker, I think, is going to get a lot of play with the Suns because he's a good shooter.
Yeah, but Devin Booker, how is he any different than Archie Goodwin, who is the same player?
He's a sharp shooter, pretty much. That's really the main reason.
Yeah, as a sharpshooter, who doesn't really do anything else right now.
He's gotten a lot of play in preseason. Rashad Vaughn with the Bucks. Now, Rashad Vaughn hurt his knee in the middle of college play, so not a lot of people saw him at UNLV. But he might be one where you're like, where did he come from? You know?
He might be, and, you know, it's... That's the problem with Milwaukee, is their roster is just a floating enigma. It's like, okay, well, in theory, that should be Chris Middleton's spot. But if you move Chris to the three, you're moving Giannis to the four.
The other one's watching, Justice Winslow with the Heat, and the other one...
Winslow's going to get no time.
Terry with Boston, correct?
It was something
Kelly Oubre, because if they need three-point shooting, they're going to have to go with him in Washington. And then there's Bobby Portis, who I think Fred Hoiberg's in love with him in Chicago.
Bobby Portis has been destroying preseason. And
but then again,
insane.
So did Kelvin Cato.
Yeah, that's the problem, is everybody, he's like, well, he's not going to get any minutes under Hoiberg's system, not with, you know, you're going to be starting Mitrodic and Gasol, and then you got Noah, and you have McDermott, who's still there. And
who is going to make their first All-Star game this year?
That is a tough
mine's
one.
Mine's kind of easy, because it's sort of one of those, I can't believe he hasn't made the All-Star game type of players.
Kawhi Who's Leonard. That? He hasn't
Kawhi
made an All-Star
Leonard
game?
Has not made an All-Star game before. Can you believe that? I'll give you a couple.
That's
a Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Think he'll make it.
Rudy Gobert has not made the All-Star game.
Well, yes, from his 1 year.
He didn't play his... I don't even remember him his rookie year. That was in 2014. I don't even remember it. It was almost like last year was his rookie year in a ways.
Yeah.
Any chance a rookie makes the All-Star game? Any. It rarely happens. I think Blake Griffin did it in 2009.
I would have to be from the East. And I don't see anyone...
So, it would either be kind of a veteran who hasn't gotten his shot yet, you know, on one of these teams, or it would be somebody who's already proven himself, but it just so happens that they haven't made the All-Star game yet. Got somebody like a Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, maybe... DeMar DeRozan, has he made one?
He did. I think he went to the All-Star game last season.
Because I'm like, with this new system, everybody's sort of expected the Raptors to tank, but let's say they take off with this newfound style, and he, you know, that's a team that's not going to stay where they are. They're going to be really better or really worse.
I don't think Dragic has ever made the All-Star game. Do you think that one would be one to keep an eye on?
I don't. To keep an eye
Victor
on.
Victor Oladipo with the Magic?
No.
Just
I don't.
The way you said that.
See, the problem with that is, if you've been watching preseason, they still play him at point guard.
They don't want to play Elfrid Payton. I don't know why.
I don't know whether Payton's injured or what's going on with him, but
I
saw Oladipo with the point. I'm like, he's been horrible his whole career there, and...
You can't say Jimmy Butler, because he's already been there. Mozgov?
No, because Kevin Love will get it for Cleveland.
I don't think Andre Drummond's been to the All-Star game yet.
Then Drummond can make it.
It's just falling. I think that's really the most important ones that I see off the top of my head. So which pick would you settle with?
Kawhi.
I agree there. I mean, is there any chance he doesn't make the All-Star team?
Oh, yeah, there's a great chance he doesn't make the All-Star team. The fact the West is so completely stacked.
Even though he's saying that he's planning to stay in Detroit, because we were just talking about him, what is Andre Drummond worth? I think we talked about this in the summer, but let's revisit it.
I think he's still a max guy.
So why are they at an impasse right now? Is it the same thing like Tristan Thompson?
I don't think they're at an impasse. They're both saying it would be smart for me to sign after you sign other people. We saw what, you know, Kawhi waited, and by him waiting, you got Aldridge. Well,
and that's the thing, too. He's not really betting on himself, because he didn't sign. He's not at a point where he has to sign the tender. You know, when you sign the tender like Greg Monroe did, his former teammate, then you're betting on yourself. You know, Tristan.
Yeah,
Tristan,
he's just saying.
I think that was one of the reasons for Tristan Thompson's situation. I don't think he wanted to bet on himself.
I wouldn't. Players are always willing to bet on themselves. I didn't think everyone around him was like, no, on that team, You're going to be buried.
Best offseason move. Just one. Just give me one.
The way the preseason has gone, watching Derek Williams at New York, it seemed to he seems to be
low value's best move. I like those.
Well, that's what I sort of go by is, you know, last year with Indiana getting CJ Miles and Stuckey for nothing. It's just you can say the big signings, who's gonna be the great one? The easy money it would be Aldridge.
Mine was the Rockets getting Ty Lawson for basically nothing.
See, I don't think that's gonna work as great as everybody thinks. I feel like Lawson's the missing piece.
I feel like that all they needed was a good point guard, and they got one.
A lot of yes, he was a missing piece, but also he was the one that created the locker room division. He was the cancer in Denver, and he comes with baggage and off the court problems. That's a lot to. Hope he gets everything back together.
Go with a big one, like maybe something like LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Spurs or Paul Pierce going to the Clippers.
That's the obvious one, and I can't do the obvious picks. It has to be, who would be the best signing, right? Preseason, Derek Williams, Amir Johnson to the Celtics seems to be, providing that inside the depth toughness they didn't have. It's just. Under the radar signings.
One that you and I liked was Marco Bellinelli going to the Kings.
Bellinelli to the Kings is a great signing. Lance Stevenson to the Clippers. The people you get to fill out the roster. No, I liked it. The people you get to fill the rosters who all of a sudden become now players.
You spent all of last season when we did our first year crapping on Lance for going to the Hornets because you didn't think it was going to work. Now he's with the Clippers and you like it. I mean, is it really just the good fortune of going from one team to another that takes a player's abilities and says, well, this can work here even though it didn't work there?
It's, you look at his numbers, he's a player, he's averaging 13-6. Oh, well, let's make him a superstar now. Why is he only averaging 13-6? Well, maybe that's what he's going to give you, and you expect him to be that number one guy, which he can't be. Now, you're the sixth man, you're the fourth option on your team. You might even say fifth, depending upon who's on the court.
Worst move, I'll give you an obvious one, and that was the Mavericks not getting DeAndre Drummond. That'd be a great player if you put him together, but no. The Mavericks not getting DeAndre Jordan was huge.
I thought you also said Magic.
I said Magic. I said the Mavericks. I just said it too fast.
Mavericks not
getting Jordan was enormous. That was enormous. That killed that team. Killed him.
Charlotte doubling down on mediocrity, I think, is a bad choice. Portland giving Al-Farouq Aminu $20 million.
Signing Enes Kanter.
The Thunder re-signing Enes Kanter for the hip price. I want to say yes.
The Kings trading two right swaps and two first round picks to dump salary.
Who knows? Let's say it pays off, and those are high 20 picks. Those are nothing. Those are essentially useless if they're.
It's still a bad move.
That's just a I'm betting on myself move. I know I've torn my ACL twice, but I'm going to bet on myself this year.
Would you consider Cleveland's overspending a bad move overall, or the safe move?
It's if the one thing is people have short memories. So everyone's going to say that's a smart move because this is the year you need to buy the championship. Because San Antonio, the Clippers have reloaded. And that's why I said it's a four-team race because I don't think Houston could beat any of those four teams.
Give me a potential disappointment. It could be a player. It could be a team.
Chicago. Chicago is going to falter early, and there's going to be rumblings to get rid of Noah, or if Bobby Portis starts playing well like you think he will, and I think he will as well, and that team starts off slow, there's going to be trouble because Thibodeau, you know, he wore his team out and he wore out the welcome with the media, but he still won. And if you don't win immediately there in Chicago, there'll be trouble.
Mine is the Toronto Raptors. Like, I'm not saying that the Atlantic Division has improved so much. I just don't know how good the Raptors can really be with what they have. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about Kyle Lowry and, you know, how he's looked, you know, with the weight loss. DeMar DeRozan, I think he's already peaked as a player. Jonas Valanciunas got paid, but we're still waiting to see something. And I don't think the team was as deep as people were claiming that it was last season. And I think it's starting to show that they're really just, they just don't have a lot of depth on their bench like people are saying they are. And their identity is an offensively-minded identity, but they're in an Eastern Conference where all the good teams are good defensive teams. So,
yeah, that's why they're trying to change it on the fly by getting rid of Lou Williams and
you know, more defensive guys like drafting Norman Powell and DeLon Wright and getting Bismack Biyombo and you know.
Bismack Biyombo is also could be a potentially great signing.
What about Splitter going to the Hawks?
I don't. They have Splitter and Walter Tavares are coming in, but as long as you have Al Horford and Millsap there, they're not going to get playing time. They're just going to be, you know, they're just going to spell them.
The other part about the Raptors is also Dwayne Casey. Like, I just don't think Dwayne Casey is much for a coach. And you sometimes for teams, you can only go as far as the coach can bring you or help bring you.
That is the case, but let's say they fire him early in the season, which, you know, would probably be the next category. Who's the first coach to get fired? I think we probably both agree it might be Casey or maybe Vogel.
That's a good one. So you would say Dwayne Casey?
Oh, he currently has the hottest seat, I think, of all.
What about Jeff Hornacek in Phoenix?
No, because I think management has shook up the team too much for him to be on the hot seat, because it's like, well, I was doing something, then you blew up my team. But so who? I can't think of anyone who has a hotter seat right now.
Charlotte. Fred Brown, 76ers. His isn't hot because nobody's at the games.
Nobody. You know. I haven't seen any player development from him. Well, he hasn't had any players because they trade him away every other week. Yeah, but I don't see this guru that he was supposed to be. As for Charlotte, I don't think they just, in the end, nobody's going to care about that team.
Give me a team-related storyline, whether it be a rivalry or, you know, teams on a quest to win a ring or maybe teams that potentially could fall apart. Give me one storyline that you're kind of paying attention to the most with a specific team.
Ironically, it's Orlando. If Aaron Gordon plays as well as he's been playing in the preseason, you now have a problem with him, Hizanja, and then big money re-signing there.
Tobias Harris, you mean?
Tobias Harris. That's a logjam. Somebody's got to go.
For me... It's two of the teams that we had mentioned last week in the previews. I think the pressure's on big for the Cleveland and the LA Clippers. I mean, this is the year where it feels like you got to do it now. You got to get to a finals, or you got to win a championship, or this whole legacy is going to be a failure.
Also, we mentioned Chicago and their potential problem with Bobby Portis and Joakim Noah. We've mentioned many episodes how he's past his prime, we think.
Well, that's a good one, and I'll lead off with it, and it's potential star player that will be traded. I think it's Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah, I would also say Zach Randolph. Let's say that team finally does falter, as
we've
been
expecting. That is essentially blowing up that team. That's what that is.
Well, you have Mike Connolly, who I think he's a free agent next year.
I get that. What I'm saying is that the balance of that team is so delicate that letting Randolph go ruins it. It ruins the chemistry.
But let's say the team starts doing bad. Let's say Gasol's out for the year and, you know, Dave Joerger's could be on the hot seat because, like, well, what have you done? You're just a first-round exit guy.
And that's what they would be.
That's what we're projecting them again this year. Well, you know, partly because we've unfortunately project Oklahoma City as a first round exit because they're going up, you know, the 4-5 matchup right now potentially is Houston, Oklahoma City.
It's going to be really tough in the West. I mean, we talk about how there is parity at some point in the NBA. There's parity to a degree, and that's in the middle of the pack in both conferences. And then in some cases, it's in almost the entirety of the conference. You know, in the West, when you go from like slots 4 to 8, or maybe past that 9 and 10, there is room to move up and down. But when you get to like the top 3, those are the best teams, and you're really not going to shake it. You know, in the East, it's really just a few teams also, maybe just 2, you know. And then, you know, the thing is, for these teams that are at the top, you know, they're not going to change as much as you think they are. And that's just the case in the NBA every single year. And people say, well, man, the NBA is boring. The same teams are always good. But I do feel like in the West that the same teams that are always good got even better.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, the same teams are always good. So the Clippers were always good. Golden State wasn't a laughing stock of the league. You know, the funny thing is, Golden State, let's look at any of these teams that are making the playoffs. Golden State, what do you have? You have Curry was the seventh or eighth pick Klay Thompson was the 11th pick. The year before that, they had Ekpe Udo was a 6th pick. You know, you have a lot of lottery. Look at Washington, Bradley Beal was the 3rd pick. Wall was the 1st. Otto Porter, failure, was the 3rd pick. You have a lot of lottery teams from a couple, 5-7 years ago who are now things have changed.
The difference here is that a lot of these teams' success have, even though it had a lot to do with different dealings and different moves that came together and crystallized at the same time, you can really pinpoint it for the most part to one moment. You know, like Malcolm Gladwell did that book, The Tipping Point. You know, every team's got a tipping point. Even the Spurs, you can go all the way back to 1997 with Tim Duncan. That was the tipping point. You know, that's why they've been so great for so long, because that's how long that foundation has been set since they drafted Duncan way back in the late 90s. With Golden State, you could really just come down to just saying that it was getting Curry after David Kahn of the Timberwolves passed on him twice. You know, and then with the Clippers, it was the Chris Paul trade, which was supposed to be the Lakers, and it didn't happen because David Stern shot it down. And then with the Rockets, it was the James Harden trade that nobody knew was going to happen until about 2 weeks before the season started.
Yep, that's what it, you know, and again, look at Oklahoma City, Durant number 2, Westbrook was 4, Harden was the 3rd pick. Ibaka was 23rd, but...
Well, do you think we focus too much on that one move or those 2 moves, or do you think that's really what puts together all the other moves?
That's what puts together all the other moves, and that's what Philly is banking on, is if we get that Durant, we get that Westbrook...
Ben Simmons, maybe.
You know, then the next few picks down the line are going to be, okay, we have, let's say, Simmons with the number 6 pick Noel, number 2 pick, or 3 pick Okafor.
You're an LSU guy, too. After getting a glance at him, do you see Ben Simmons as that kind of guy?
I'm an LSU football guy. Basketball, they're usually... Ben Simmons is just another long line of their 6'10 athletic guys who I don't know if they could really play offensively yet.
He's really good at sharing the ball at his size, and he's a very good defender.
Okay, that's the thing. Like, I haven't seen any of that yet, but just off the history of, you know, Stromile Swift, Tyrus Thomas, just big, super athletic guys. And yeah, all I know, from now, just the college storyline is how everybody is sort of like this Kentucky team isn't as good as people think they are.
How do you have any idea how hard it is going to be to top last year? The only way you can top it is by going undefeated and winning the whole thing.
But I mean, everybody knew they're going to take a step back. But I think a lot of people are like, well, this might not even be a top.
Well, also the other teams in the SEC are slowly getting better. You know, they got Avery Johnson in Alabama. I don't know how good of a signing that was, because that's the weird thing. NBA coaches, you would think NBA coaches are smarter than college coaches because they have to deal with more ego and they have to juggle more balls. But the problem is that we've seen NBA coaches go to college and stink.
The thing is, they don't know recruiting. The players come to them. It's not. It's for an NBA coach, it's the GM's job to bring you talent. You could say, I sort of like this guy, but you have to now tell this kid, I need you more than anybody else, and you don't want to go to North Carolina because you want to come here.
Speaking of recruiting, let's talk about an old favorite of yours in Boston, Rick Pitino. Give me your quick take on the Louisville scandal.
Isn't that everywhere? Hasn't there been... That's usually a football story.
What they don't have is a whistleblower. Louisville had a whistleblower. That's the difference.
Well, that's the problem, is you have a whistleblower, so either he's going to go down as allowing this to happen, sort of like the Tarkanian UNLV Lawless era, or the Jim Boeheim Paterno... You've lost control of your program. You don't know what's going on.
Which act do you think is more punishable, in your opinion? I know this is more of a political angle, but just your take.
There's a fine line, because you always have that fall guy, but between you and...
Andre McGee.
You always have that fall guy for you. You never, like, even like Ohio State with Tressel and the... The prior thing with the autographs and whatnot, you always have somebody in between you. And the problem is, okay, now do you say that's now you've lost control of the program, or just you that smart moves of having
the
somebody?
The key difference was that Tressel, at the end of the day, fessed up. You know, and he got punished for lying. He got show cause, which is that punishment where, you know, basically you're unhirable by the NCAA standards for like 3 years.
Same thing with Pearl.
But the moment his show cause ended, what happened? He got signed literally the next day by Auburn, you know?
He got signed because Auburn has a terrible program.
Does that mean
show
cause is kind of a joke, because the moment these people are able to be hired, they're going to be hired? Like Jim Tressel.
They're going to be hired, but...
You know?
Oh, he'll be hired. Oh, look at it. Was it Bobby Petrino at Arkansas? Yeah. You know, had a mysterious, you know...
The motorcycle accident, Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, who hires him? Well, he got hired, but yeah, that was Western Kentucky.
And then,
okay, now he's back to Louisville.
He had to lower his standards. You know, he had been to Louisville.
That's the thing, is you need to take a lower tier job and work your way back. The same thing, Mike Leach at Texas Tech. Now you're at Washington State.
Yeah, I know this ain't a football podcast, but he's weirdly turned it around at Washington State. It took him a long time, though, because
that team had nobody
so
there.
Bad, you know, under Paul Wolf. That was just, man, when Mike Price left there, and, you know, it's so weird. We were just talking about sexual favors at Louisville. Mike Price got fired at Alabama before he even started, because I think he was using the budget to, like, pay for strip clubs. Is that right? He was visiting.
Something
he was
like
spending
that.
Time at strip clubs, and he had gotten photographed or something. It was right around the same time that Larry Eustace was kissing co-eds at a party, and it got on the internet. You know, that was the true beginning of the impact of social media with sports. It was when those two coaches got fired, you know, for things that were really just hearsay back in the day.
Yeah, there was always the rumors of, oh, that was, you know, that's the party school and all that. Yeah, they do that. Which, of course, that was Colorado in the 90s or the late 80s, the same problem. But it's just, you know, so it has it. Just, again, you have the whistleblower who's bitter for whatever reason.
We were just talking about this social media. Player most likely to get vined, like the biggest vine, you know. The ones that were kind of the biggest off the top of my head were the Otto Porter play, Blake Griffin with the spin-around dunk on Aaron Baines.
I was going to say, there's no reason it shouldn't be Griffin and Giannis.
Okay. Well,
just those.
What
two
about a
brain?
Give me
crazy.
A random brain fart. Something that you would just not even think.
J.R. Smith. He'll do something. Give him Nick Young. Nick Young and Lou Williams together. Give him time.
I think this is a random one. I can't even name a player. I think it's going to be somebody farting on the court and everyone running away.
Kaminsky.
I don't think we've seen like a really like popular Vine. We've seen the one of LeBron farting on the bench, and I can't remember who was next to him, but he's like, ooh, and he runs away, and LeBron is smiling. I think that's the next one. I think, you know, the funny part, the one thing I really like about Vine and Twit did and Facebook and memes is that you have to catch them at the most like innocuous of moments. It's not like the kind of thing where it's like publicized really highly. You kind of have to search for it. Like the Otto Porter play was a very random Bulls Wizards game in the middle of the season that nobody watched. You know, it was just funny because he wasn't watching, you know?
So, you know, they just need a camera on the moment at the time.
Media, I mean, anytime you do something like that, everyone's going to see it. And God help you if it's on a big stage. Like, you know, Russell Wilson.
Yep, so I think that covers all the awards, I think. Oh, champion.
Two more. League MVP.
Oh, League MVP, I thought we already said it should be Anthony Davis.
I didn't say mine yet.
I thought you'd agree because it's just what. Anytime you can mention Anthony Davis, you'll be like, sure.
I think it's going to be Blake Griffin. I think Blake Griffin is going to increase his numbers again. I think he's going to play about as well as he did in the postseason. If you watch him in the postseason, Blake Griffin was the best player on the court, you know, against the Spurs and the Rockets. You know, so I feel like the Clippers are going to take that next step with Griffin as the leader instead of Paul. Even though I know Griffin isn't a leader, like, in terms of, like, locker room, but I think on the court, he's the best player. And it's going to start.
All right. What's the last one?
Give me your finals prediction.
I'm going to say the Clippers. The Clippers, if they don't win it this year, they should just dismantle the team.
I think the Spurs are going to beat Cleveland.
Clippers, Cavs, Spurs, Cavs. I think we both agree. We don't see Golden State repeating.
It's so hard to repeat. I mean, even when the Heat did it in 2013, it was so hard for them to do that.
It was so hard because, like, you know, we mentioned last week, just every team, that's the game you need to win. As long you can win, you can lose every game, but as long as you beat the defending champs, okay, you can hang your head
on that.
So
can you make the case that three-peating is easier than winning the second one? Now the Heat failed in 2014, and I know the Lakers struggled with the Kings the third time, but it felt to me like it was a little, there was more attrition getting to that second title and, you know, setting up that legacy that you want to win this many in a row than it is to win that third one, because the third one feels like you're tacking it on, you know?
Because usually with the second one, you need to face that, you know, the lethargy, championship, the increased pressure. The third one, you have you've now established the, okay, now we know we're serious, which is why, you know, San Antonio always would falter the second year because they just got, like, lazy and, you know, they're like, well, we need to rest and we need our pace, and everyone's like, no, you are our game of the season.
The hard part, obviously, is holding on to that status with the free agency, with the injuries, three seasons in a row. That's incredibly hard. You know, that's why it always trips people up, outside of when Michael did it twice and when Shaq did it in the 2000s. I mean, the Spurs can't even repeat. That's why I mentioned that. Like, the Spurs, for a team as mentally strong as the Spurs, to not be able to win two titles in a row, that just shows how hard it is to do it. You know, but
yep.
It's just been fun. It's been fun. I'll give you a couple of previews for this upcoming week as we are in the month of November. Indiana at Detroit in November. Nothing happens when the Pacers play the Pistons in the Palace, huh?
Oh, those times are long gone. These are two. Those were two, you know, strong teams. Now,
I think the only
one
still there that was involved was Rick Mahorn. Because he does the radio games or the telecast, I believe. The Clippers go to the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday, November the 4th. On November the 5th, the one I'm watching is Oklahoma City at Chicago. You're not big on Chicago, though. You feel like things might not...
I'm not big on Chicago. That's why there's another Chicago match with Chicago, I think Orlando, okay. I'm more interested in, because Orlando, this is sort of their test of, are you going to take that step forward, or are you just going to be as horrible as we expect you to be?
Yeah, that was one of the best highlights. I think it was when Vucevic did that dunk on Pau Gasol. You know, I've seen that on a couple of compilations. That was last season. And that was in Chicago. Washington at Boston on Friday. Will you be there? November the 6th.
No.
Why not?
No, I am... we're not going to get into it, but I'll be seeing a lot less games this year.
Saturday, November the 7th. One I'm kind of keeping an eye off. Defensive struggle, I guess. The Grizzlies at the Jazz. We'll see a lot of big boy ball there. Indiana at Cleveland. So we'll see Paul George and LeBron James face off for the first time in quite a while on November the 8th, Sunday. And then Monday, November the 9th, Memphis at Clippers. Would you call them rivals? I mean, I know they played each other a couple times in the playoffs.
No.
I mean, I don't know if there's a dislike there, but I know that they've faced off quite a few times.
No, I don't really see anything there. I would just say, you know, another interesting matchup would be Toronto at Miami, two teams that could go either direction.
It's the problem with November basketball is that, you know, it's the beginning of the season, it's fresh and new, everyone kind of pays close attention, but at the end of the day, they're the least important games.
They're the least important, but that's how you set up your roster. That's how you know who can and can't do anything. And if you start off slow, really slow, and if you don't make adjustments, you'll be the first one fired.
Very good. All right, and that's going to be finishing off this one. I hope everybody enjoys as the regular season goes along. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reed.